And away we go, hour number three of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Nuggets GM Calvin Booth will be stopping by, and you will hear from him 20 minutes from now. At the top of the hour, Eric Eager for Sumer Sports will join us to recap the 2023 NFL Draft, and then you will also hear at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, from the owner of the Florida Panthers and Vinny Viola after their historical victory last night to move on to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. By the way, you can think of O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You do have game one between the Celtics and Sixers. No Joel Embiid tonight. Adrian Wojnarowski before the game did say that the Sixers are optimistic that he'll be able to play in game number two, but early stages, still in the first half, 10:40 to go in the first half. The Celtics are up 38-34. And Hickey, I don't know about you, but I really can't see a path where the Sixers win this series. And if this goes to seven games, I'll be stunned. I'd probably give the Sixers two games in this series if you tell me that the Boston Celtics win this series in five games. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever, but I'm going to go with that the Celtics find a way to go back to the Eastern Conference Finals and that they'll win this series in six games.
Even if Embiid is healthy, and I know he's not playing tonight, and it looks like he's going to at least try or be on track for game number two, to me, it doesn't matter. I don't see a big difference in the Sixers team this year compared to previous teams that have struggled in the postseason, especially against this Celtics team. I will say right now, Celtics in five, and I'd be even surprised if it gets to six games.
And here's the other thing, too. Embiid even admitted it a few years ago, or last year, I think it was. I forget when he said this, but he gave the line of, you can't call it a rivalry when one team's just kicking our ass every time they play. And that's what Embiid said. And I'll give him credit for acknowledging that, because sometimes, right, when you lose to a team that is quote-unquote a rival, you don't usually hear that from someone that's a star of an organization. But even though Embiid has dealt with injuries, and we all know that he's a great player and he'll probably win the MVP as that's announced tomorrow night, which I hate that, by the way, where they have this award show at the end of the year, but they announce all the awards scattered around throughout the postseason. That doesn't make sense to me. But what I will say is that the Sixers have failed Embiid. And I just wonder when Embiid is eventually going to want out. I know he loves Philly. I know he loves the organization. But this team, through however many times that they've tried to get him a number two, whether it was Ben Simmons, I know Markelle Fultz is going to be the third piece, and even James Harden. It's like, yeah, James Harden's he's going to be a free agent this summer. There's all the reports that maybe he's going to go back to Houston. And the easy thing to do is to go get Dame Lillard. I don't know how they're going to get Dame Lillard. But if you can't get Dame, it's like, what are you going to do to replace Harden? And don't get me wrong, I like Tyrese Maxey a lot. And Maxey's been really good. But you need that number two piece that's solidified. And it's crazy to me, Hickey, through all the moves that they've made, how they've not been able to find that number two piece. And the craziest part is, the guy that Embiid is so close with, Jimmy Butler, was on that team. And I know it's right reported that Butler took less money to go join the Miami Heat. But if you know that situation, Jimmy Butler was not back in Philadelphia because no matter how it was reported, Ben Simmons basically won out there. Because Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler just weren't going to coexist. It just wasn't going to happen.
Right. And obviously that's the biggest one where, you know, that's the guy that we always look at, the one that got away. But I will say, yes, I would agree in one sense that the Sixers have failed Embiid. Also, he's failed them, though. He's not been healthy. And I get he's not trying to get injured. I get injuries are, you know, happen more than just, you know, it's not really a skill thing. But the Sixers have been in the postseason six times with Embiid on the roster. Five out of the 6 years they made the postseason, he's missed at least one game. The only time he did was in the bubble when they got swept in four games by the Celtics. He was dealing with an ankle injury that he played through. He can't stay healthy. And I get it. It's just you can't predict injuries. But it's also now a trend. Every year in the postseason, he is dealing and playing through some sort of injury. It's either keeping him out or limiting his effectiveness.
But not that you just say, okay, when you look at injuries, that they obviously stink, they're horrible, they're an unfortunate part of the game. It's just, whenever he gets injured, you never believe in the team anyway, even before the injury. Every Sixer fan, if they're being honest with you, they'll admit it. The reason why they made such a big stink for the MVP award this year, I'm not saying that Embiid doesn't deserve it. It's because they know in their heart that this isn't a championship team. So they're going to advocate and call to support their guy to go win an MVP. Because that's the only thing the Sixers are going to be winning this year. I'll tell you, the only time I thought they had a championship team or somewhat resembling of a championship team was when they lost in the second round to the Raptors. When Kawhi hit that shot at the end of the game and it bounced off the rim like three or four times. And if they would have won that series, maybe they would have went on to win the whole thing. Because remember, you can't predict injuries, but Golden State got decimated with injuries that year. And the next thing you know, Kawhi is in the finals and wins it. And I would probably bet that the Sixers would have beat the Bucks in the next round just with the team the Sixers had that year, because that's really before when things started to hit the fan in Philadelphia. So it's, yes, you're not wrong, and Embiid's got to stay healthy. But this team wouldn't even be close to being in this position if it wasn't for Embiid. I know you're not knocking Embiid and saying that. I know you understand his importance, but even if he's fully healthy, this team's not beating Boston. Because the team has not given him a number two star that could go hit those clutch shots late. Like we talked about, as great as Nikola Jokic is, they're not a championship team until they get Jamal Murray back. And that's what they had happen this year. And Jamal Murray showed that he could be back for that ACL. And the first round, he had two great games. And then he had a great game to open things up, take a 1-0 lead up against the Suns. And Philly has to find Joel Embiid basically what Nikola Jokic has in Jamal Murray. And they haven't been able to find it. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Let's get to five questions, five answers. We do this every Monday and Friday. We'll get to onsides, offsides. HTH, hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside! Defense number 69!
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Hickey, what do you got?
All right, Zach, to keep it very, very simple, Steph Curry was incredible yesterday as he scored a Game 7 record 50 points as the Warriors beat the Kings to advance to the Western Conference semis. Now, Curry went 20 of 38 from the field while scoring or assisting on 66 of Golden State's 120 points. Now, the defending champs needed every bit of Steph's historic performance as Klay Thompson in Game 7 went just 4 of 19 from the floor and Andrew Wiggins shot 5 of 16. So onsides or offsides, this was Steph Curry's most impressive playoff performance of his career.
There's been so many impressive playoff performances by Steph Curry, but there's tiebreakers. It's like when you have, like, who's the greatest quarterback of all time? You have so many great quarterbacks, but then you use championships as tiebreakers. So the stage that it happened in does matter. First round, don't get me wrong, on the road in a raucous environment up against the Sacramento Kings. But just for starters, last year when he's in the belly of the beast of Boston and you're down 2-1 in the series and he puts up 43 points with 7 of 14 from 3 and 14 of 26 from the field and had 10 rebounds, that to me is already better than the one in Game 7 yesterday because it happened to the NBA Finals. And that knotted up that series at 2 games apiece, and then the Warriors ended up to win 2 more when they won the series in 6 games. So just for starters, that one is in front. So you ask me, was this Steph Curry performance the most impressive playoff performance of his career? Yeah, it was obviously impressive, but that one last year in the Finals was more impressive to me, so I go offside.
Offside!
The Boston Bruins etched their name into the history books last night as they joined an infamous list of historic regular season teams.
Yeah, not a list you want to be on.
No, that do not win a championship. After recording the most wins and points in NHL history, the Bruins were bounced in the first round by the Panthers after their 4-3 overtime loss in Game 7 at home yesterday. In other sports, the Warriors back in 2015-2016 won the most regular season game, 73, only to blow a 3-1 lead in the finals, so the Cavaliers did not win that finals. The Patriots, as you know very well, were 18-0, lost in the Super Bowl to the Giants back in 07, and the 2001 Mariners recorded the most wins in MLB regular season history, only to lose to the Yankees in the ALCS. Onsides or offsides, the Bruins losing in the first round after setting an NHL record is the biggest choke in sports history.
Does this have to be a team that had the most wins in the regular season? Because I have one matchup that the team didn't have the most wins in the regular season that I think is the biggest choke of all time.
Ooh, interesting. Who is that?
The Yankees.
Oh, against the Red Sox, up 3-0?
In 04. You're up 3-0. You just have to win one game. Like, here's what I'll say. Not that I'm defending the Patriots losing to the Giants in that Super Bowl. It's one game. You look at these series where a team's up 3-1 or they're up 3-0. You have multiple chances. You have four chances to win one game. That's the thing to me. Weird to say impressive here. That makes it more impressive that you weren't able to win the whole thing. I look at they're up 3-0 against the Red Sox. 3-0 against the Red Sox. And you weren't able to win one game? Remember that game three? I forgot what the score was, like 18-9 or something like that. It was crazy.
18-9. Doubled them up.
And you couldn't win one game after that. So that, to me, is the biggest sports choke of all time. Just off the top of the head. But is that the way that you wanted me to answer that question? Just wondering.
Sure. Yeah, sure. I was going for the biggest choke of all time. So that technically counts.
But this one's up there. It is definitely up there. You're up 3-1 with the most points, most wins against a team with the fewest points in the playoffs. Ooh, that's brutal. But I'll go Yankees choking 3-0 in the ALCS compared to the Bruins losing in the first round after setting a NHL regular season record is the biggest choke job in sports history. So I go offsides.
Offside.
How did you answer that one, by the way?
Oh, I think it's Bruins, honestly, by a mile.
More than up 3-0.
Yes. You were the best team statistically we've ever seen in the NHL.
Yeah, but...
And you're losing the first round.
But hockey's so weird. Like, remember, it was, what, 3-4 years ago where Tampa Bay, they had, I think it was like 119 points, and they got swept in the first round?
And the Bruins were better. And they're up 3-1. Win one game. Two of those three games at home. And he choked it away.
I'm not defending Boston, but for me, up 3-0, that's crazy. Like, we've seen teams come back 3-1, and also hockey, it's so bizarre.
We have seen teams come back from 3-0 deficits.
Hockey, I feel like each and every year, there's at least two or three major upsets in the first round. So, anyway, let's keep it moving.
Speaking of upsets, parity has struck the NBA playoffs as to the first round, team seeded first, second, third, and fourth have all been eliminated. The Celtics right now are currently the odds-on favorite to win the title, followed by the Warriors and Nuggets. Denver's looking to go up 2-0 in the Suns later on tonight. Well, the Celtics do have an early lead over the Sixers, while Joel Embiid is not playing, missing game number one. Onsides or offsides, the Celtics are your pick to win the NBA Finals.
I really want to pick Denver. I do. But... that's now, isn't it funny? Going into the postseason, the West is kind of viewed as weak. And now, you look at these last four teams, you got the Suns, the Nuggets, the Lakers, and the Golden State Warriors. As much as I do think Denver's going to get on out of that West gauntlet, I can't tell you I'm shocked if they end up losing in the conference finals or even if they lose to the Suns. Those four teams, you can flip a coin. But the Celtics, now with the Bucks out, it was a two-team race. I think the Celtics are now above every other team in the Eastern Conference. Now, Miami's going to be difficult if they're in the conference finals because Jimmy Butler doesn't go out without a fight, but who knows where he's going to be at from a health standpoint with that ankle injury. Yeah, I got to give the edge to Boston right now. So I'll say Boston's my pick to win the NBA Finals on sides.
Let's talk a little football, because over the weekend, plenty of teams had solid NFL drafts. The Eagles continue to build their Georgia pipeline, drafting both Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith in the first round. But the Texans made the big splash.
Why do you have to do this?
What? Do what?
Oh, I just saw your tweet.
Oh, with the Rangers?
Can't we just be on the same team one time?
Oh.
Where you just learn your lesson from last year? Were you guaranteed pretty much a Stanley Cup parade when they were up 2-0 against Tampa Bay? Can you just do... If you want to mess up the Colts, if you want to mess up Penn State,
fine. Not messing up anybody.
But come on.
Bringing some confidence in.
Hey, you had that work in Game 3 when they lost.
Where's your confidence level?
I do think they're going to win the game. I don't need your prediction, though, tweeted.
I like tweeting predictions.
Ugh.
I don't say my
brand. Here's the Hickey Hex tweet. Rangers 4, Devils 1. Rangers are a team the last 2 years that is at their best when their backs are against the wall. They'll come out ready to go. Ay, ay, ay. Please.
Am I wrong?
You know Boomer Esiason, he has that freezer and he throws the jerseys in the freezer?
Yes.
We need to throw you and Mraz in the freezer. We'll have to get an extra large freezer
that
to fit you and Mraz.
That would not do well.
More so Mraz.
I get
but
cold kind of quickly.
Oh, they got a chance right out of the gate here. Oh, this would be great if they scored. And they don't because the Hickey Hex is alive. Please.
Well, Ack, don't worry. Ack gave me a hug, so it's all good.
What the heck does that mean?
Ack, usually, in a joking manner, I like to believe most of the time, always says, oh, Hickey, I hate you. You're the worst, blah, 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 blah. But now, since all three of us are Ranger fans, since the playoffs have started, Ack has realized the nicer he is to me, the better the Rangers have played.
Okay,
so
fine.
Today I walk in, and you know Ack, germaphobe. This guy does not go within 5 feet of anybody. As soon as I walked in, he gave me a hug because it was game 7.
So kindness is a two-way street. Ack's doing something nice to you. Now do us all a favor and get these stop with these predictions when it comes to the Rangers. Just stop.
I'm rewarding the faith with some confidence. That is for sure. So anyway, like we were saying, the Eagles.
I hate you.
Going back to the
when
NFL
it comes
draft,
to this tweet, I hate you. I love you all the other times, but I hate you in this regard.
I don't know why you think that I'm going to have any impact on this game.
Go ahead.
Okay, the Eagles.
Before I burst through that glass like the Kool-Aid man and just beat the crap out of you.
Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith were taken in the first round. The Texans made arguably the biggest and most surprising splash of the draft, taking C.J. Stroud at number 2. Then trading up from number 12 to number 3 to grab Alabama edge rusher Will Anderson Jr. The Panthers made the easy decision, got their quarterback of the future in Bryce Young while pairing him with Jonathan Mingo out of Ole Miss. So a lot of teams had pretty good reasons this weekend to feel good about their future. Onsides or offsides, the Eagles had the best draft of any team over the weekend.
The reason I'm going to go onsides here is that's a team that is built to win a championship. Like the Texans in a few years, you may say, oh, that was a great draft because you got your quarterback and your defensive edge rusher. 5 years from now, we may say, oh, it's the Carolina Panthers because Bryce Young ends up being a stud. But when you are a championship team and you add the pieces they did in Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, who could be immediate contributors right away, you win a championship this year, which they have a chance to do so. Those players are going to have to play a role in the defensive side of the ball. So for immediate return, that's why I'm going to go onsides on the Eagles draft. And their value of these guys were absolutely great. Jalen Carter a little bit different because of what happened off the field. But Nolan Smith being there at the end of the first round, I was surprised by that one.
And finally, let's stick with the NFL draft storyline because one of the biggest talking points of the draft was the fall of Will Levis, who went from a projected top 10 pick to out of the first round completely. Now, he was taken early on in day number 2. The Titans did draft the former Kentucky quarterback 33rd overall. He will now sit behind Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill is in the final year of his deal. Onsides or offsides, Will Levis will start at least 10 games for the Titans in 2023.
Here's the part I don't get. You would consider Will Levis a bit of a project, right? Like, I didn't view Will Levis as someone that walks in game 1 and starts right away by design.
I mean, not like, if you really think about it, not really. He started 2 years at Kentucky. He's a 5-year college player. Like, Richardson.
He didn't really play at Penn State.
Had 13 starts in his career. Whereas Levis has played, 20? I do the math here, 25 starts?
Yeah, but last year he never really looked all that good. I get what you're saying, he played.
Different. Looking good and, you know, being ready to play are two different things.
I still think there's a lot of development that has to go on. I know Tannehill gives me zero reason to believe, and you shouldn't believe that Ryan Tannehill is going to get through the entire season because of injuries or whatever happens, and they're looking to basically pull him, but 10 games is a lot. especially when he's, I don't think he's going to be starting week one. And this is just regular season, right? Not that I'm assuming that Tennessee's going to make the playoffs.
Well,
anyway,
if you want to include the postseason and him starting a wild card game, I guess if you want to go for it, go for it.
Yeah, I'll go offside on that one.
Offside!
I still think there's a lot of developing that needs to go on with Will Levis, too. All righty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Calvin Booth, the GM of the Nuggets, will join us next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio on Saturday. The Nuggets on their home court did take a 1-0 series lead in the second round of the NBA playoffs up against the Phoenix Suns, defeating Phoenix by a final score of 125-107. You got game two coming up tonight between those two teams at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. And now joining us is the general manager of the Denver Nuggets, and that, of course, is Calvin Booth. Calvin, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So it's such a feel-good story to see what Jamal Murray is doing right now. He was sensational up against the Timberwolves, and we know back in April of 2021, he unfortunately suffered that torn ACL. To see him go get 34 points on Saturday to give you guys a 1-0 series lead, just what was going through your mind when you were watching that performance?
No, it was exciting, invigorating. They had the gym energized, and it was a great win for our team.
How did your relationship the last few years, when a player suffers an injury like that, get it even stronger?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the rehab process is always very challenging for an athlete. And for him to bounce back the way he did is just amazing.
How did you guys navigate those last 2 years, just wondering?
Well, it was hard. You know, we knew we were missing our one of our emotional leaders and better producers on our team. And, you know, just wanted to give him time and space to get all the way healthy and make sure he was feeling like himself.
I saw Nikola Jokic after the game said that Jamal Murray is the best player in the Nuggets and you guys are following him right now. How did you kind of process that one when a guy that's won back-to-back MVPs is saying that about his teammate?
Yeah, I mean, that's Nikola in a nutshell. He roots for other people to do well, and that's why he plays the game the way he does. He moves the ball. He provides opportunities for guys like Jamal. And, you know, he acknowledges when Jamal's playing at his very best.
Do you think Jamal Murray right now is your guys' best player? Because a lot of people get to see that quote, they go, oh, that's just Nikola Jokic being night, it's still the Joker.
I mean, hey, look, when you talk about our best score and our toughest one-on-one matchup and the guy that probably puts the most fear in the other team, I think you absolutely have to talk about Jamal Murray. But obviously, we talk about, like, all-around controlling the game and dictating the pace and tempo of the game. I think, you know, Nikola is absolutely the best.
Nuggets GM Calvin Booth here with us. Game two coming up at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. When you look at Jamal, and you know him as well as anybody behind the scenes, in these moments, and we saw it a few years ago, him take his game to that next level, why is he able to do that?
I think, honestly, he was built for it. Him and his dad, they trained for this stuff from a young age. I mean, I've seen numerous stories, and I've heard some from him himself and his dad, but, like, you know, going outside and shooting free throw after free throw, and if you miss, he has to run and whatever it may be. But I just think the mental toughness that he built with his training regimen growing up and the ability to center himself and, like, stay focused for long periods of time just, like, was something that he worked at very hard from a young age.
You guys were able to take a 1-0 series lead. We'll see what happens tonight. Just what type of effort do you expect from the opposition in Phoenix?
They have Hall of Famers over there, so they're going to step up to the challenge, and we're going to get their best punch, but hopefully we're able to handle it.
Do you view this season as championship or bust, just wondering, for the Nuggets?
No, man. I think, you know, Giannis nailed it on the head last week when he made his very, very impactful comments about the process and you know, going forward and maybe it not working out. I think every year our team is going to be in position as long as we have these guys healthy. And, you know, we're going to try our hardest to win it. If we don't, it's not bust. I mean, it's what is bust. So I think we're going to go for it, though. We're going to give everything we got, and hopefully get it. And if we don't, we're going to give everything we got next year.
I feel like what's good for you guys this year is clearly, like, how we started this conversation. You have Jamal Murray back. And I'm sure that gives you guys a feeling like you can win it all. Last 2 years, when you didn't have Jamal on the court, that had to be tough to try to just overcome that from a mental standpoint in looking at what you didn't have on the court, right?
Definitely. Also, look, like it made it everything clear as far as what we need to do to be able to compete with the best teams. And, you know, obviously the last couple of seasons when Jamal was out, Nikola had to carry a Herculean load. And I think seeing how that impacted his energy level over the course of the season and how the defense prepared for him made it easier to see what we need to do to improve our team.
On the way out with Calvin Booth, I know the MVP award is going to be announced tomorrow. Are you like past Karen about the MVP? I know Nikola Jokic won it the last 2 years. It'd be awesome if he could win it 3 straight years in a row, but it seems like the conversation for the MVP this year just got to a level that was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. You know, a lot of good stories came out of this MVP conversation. And I do hope that Nikola wins the award. I think he does deserve it. And I know if he doesn't get it, it won't bother him that much. But he'll be really focused to try to win the whole thing.
If you had to make a case for the Joker to go back to back to back, what would the case be since you are the GM of the Nuggets?
Well, arguably this is the best season he's had out of the 3 years that the MVP has been in the conversation. And the irony in the whole thing is that he probably won't get it this year. I think everybody will be a bit surprised if he does get it, which is crazy based on the impact he's had on winning his overall stat line. But I just think I think that the way he plays every single night, the numbers he puts up, just are deserving of an MVP award.
Calvin Booth, we know that arena that you guys play in, Ball Arena, is going to be jumping tonight. If no one's ever made it out there to Denver, Colorado for a game, just what's the atmosphere like? You play in multiple venues during your time as a player than seeing it from a different side now as the general manager.
Yeah, I think it's an intimidating environment for the opponent. You have the altitude to deal with. Our fans are very excited and energized by our team, which adds to the volume in the building. And I think when you have guys like Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. and even Nikola, all these guys, Christian Brown, KCP, Bruce Brown, making exciting plays, like Jeff Green, one of the best dunks of the year. So I think we have an exciting team. And when those plays happen, our building erupts.
Well, good luck tonight. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Got to credit the Sixers for their first half performance, as you do just had the second quarter getting underway a second ago, but at halftime, it was Celtics 66, Sixers 63. James Harden with 21 points in the first half. Now, remember, no Joel Embiid tonight. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, Sixers are optimistic that you could get Joel Embiid back for game two, and you do have the Suns and Nuggets coming your way at the, I was going to say top of the hour, but it's at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Sorry, I'm distracted a little bit. I'm watching the Rangers game. It's game seven. I'm hosting a radio show. I thought I was good at multitasking, but when you're in a game seven and your team's in an elimination game, it's sometimes tough to focus, but it is no score with 5 minutes to go in the first period. Rangers on their third power play of the game. One ended pretty quickly because it ended up being a 4-on-4. The second one, they got a bunch of looks and no goals. And this one, with a minute left in the power play, so far has not been all that good. So we'll keep you updated on this game seven tonight. So, Hickey, when we get to the Western Conference, I'm actually feeling pretty good that we have these four teams left in the Western Conference. Like, going into the postseason, it was like, okay, you thought the Nuggets and the Suns, one of those two teams out of the eight could get to the finals. And then you, courtesy-wise, said until someone takes out the Warriors, they're always going to be a tough out. That's just the way that I felt about this. Now as we sit here, and we have game two between the Nuggets and Suns tonight, and Denver's already up 1-0, I'm not saying the series is over. It's the farthest thing from being over. But the Suns have not looked good so far this postseason. And it's weird to say that about a team that in the first round they won their series in five games. But that's been a team where in the first round, like, who are you going up against? You went up against the Clippers, who did not have Paul George. And then Kawhi, after two games, did not play in the series. He was a non-factor, which we've ended up finding out that was a meniscus injury. And then the Suns give you that stinker in game one. We're sure we should praise Jamal Murray and his excellence first, and it's great to see Jamal Murray back. But this Suns team, tonight's a big night for them. Now, I know, right, if you go down 2-0, you could come on back. We just saw the Warriors do this. But this is a Suns team that's also dealing with the mental side of it, too. Yes, they just got Kevin Durant, which they didn't have last year. But this is a Suns team that they were up 2-0 a few years ago in the NBA Finals. They lost in six to Milwaukee. And last year, in the second round against Dallas, I don't know what the heck happened in Game 7, because that was one of the more lethargic performances that you would ever see in an elimination game by a team where you knew by the end of the first quarter that game was over. And it just, you doubled down on that feeling at halftime, and it was like, okay, you're in hospice. You know you're not getting out of, getting out alive. Just when was the plug going to get pulled? And that was when that game was officially going to be over, when you saw zeros on the scoreboard. But I want to see where the Suns are at mentally tonight and right out of the gate, because we even talked about this after their first game, where they didn't play well right out of the gate when they were going up against the Clippers. And in game two, I know they ended up winning, but the first half was not all that, or the first quarter was not all that impressive for the Phoenix Suns. So I don't know what Phoenix team you get tonight. And they've been a team that's been so tough to figure out, and the West is only getting tougher because you're going up against Denver, who you know could get to the championship because Murray's playing great. And then even if you do get through, you're getting either the Lakers or the Warriors, where if you told me one of those teams are going to be here, I think most people could say, okay, I can get behind that. I didn't think you were going to get both teams here in this spot, especially when the Warriors went down 2-0. So we're looking at this Western Conference right now. I didn't think it was going to be much of a gauntlet heading into the postseason. Now we're here, and it's been a gauntlet with the final four teams remaining. And if you're the Suns, you go down 2-0 tonight, it's going to be tough for me to actually believe that you will come back, because so far this postseason, they've kind of been in snooze mode.
No, they absolutely have, and it's a little frustrating. I don't know if it's, you know, you overlook an opponent that, again, was missing one of their best players going into the series in Paul George, and then their best player in Kawhi Leonard then gets hurt after game two, is not played. I don't know if it's one of those, you're just not focused, you're not dialed in, but the Nuggets are absolutely not a team that you can just kind of throw your jock straps on the court and expect to win. You saw it in game number one. They got dominated. I'm with you. I think tonight's the night where, I know Frank Isola said before, I agree with him here, I think the winner of tonight wins the series. And that's how massive it is for the Suns, to where if you want to get back and have a chance to win this series and take down the Nuggets, you have to win on the road in game two and give yourself a chance at least going home that you're not in an impossible situation to dig out of.
The only reason why I would push back on that is, and I get it from the Denver side of it, if you go out 2-0, you got to feel great about it, especially with the Suns just not being that team that we thought they were going to be so far early on in the postseason. But even if the Suns win tonight and this gets to 1-1, I fully expect them, when this goes back to Denver, that this is going to be 2-2. It's tough for me, as much talent as they have, with Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, who's looking old, DeAndre Ayton, I can't trust this team to then win this game and then go to Phoenix and get both 3 and 4. Like, if this goes back 2-2 and it becomes a best of three, I would trust Denver right now more. So just because if the Suns win tonight does not mean that all of a sudden I'm going to go pick them to win this series.
Okay. I mean, they're still my pick to win the finals, so I'm not
You're picking them still to win the finals?
Oh, yeah, I'm not getting off that pick, yeah.
And you have not felt good at them at all this year.
They've not looked very good so far in the first five games, or really six games now. But I'm sticking with the pick. I'm sticking to my guns.
And you have them going up against who, Boston?
Yes. I had the Bucks, so I got to scratch that, and I'll say Boston.
Yeah, I think by when it's all said and done in the postseason, you're going to be scratching the Suns off the board as well. And I may. At least you're still surviving, and you're winning, and you're advancing. And that's the name of the game, and maybe they just kind of knew it didn't matter what the Clippers threw at them. The Suns were going to win that series, because there's no way without Kawhi and Paul George that the Clippers were going to win that series. I know a few years ago, right, the Clippers still got to the conference finals when they lost Kawhi Leonard. But when you don't have both of them, maybe mentally the Suns, that's why you saw them kind of sleep through that series, because they knew even though they were on the court, they didn't have to dominate and they would still find a way to win that series and win it pretty quickly.
I think the Suns, though, tonight, they need Kevin Durant to be more aggressive. That's the only knock I'll say of him so far going to Phoenix. He is someone who does kind of, I think he's easy to fit into a star-studded team because he doesn't really have an ego, so he's not someone that has to demand the ball or demand a certain style of play that we saw kind of with Kyrie and Durant not really work together or other super teams that have failed. But you need Kevin Durant, who has been passive, at least in the Clippers series. He's got to take over tonight. He has got to be the man for Phoenix. They won't have a chance to tie this game or tie this series.
Well, they also, whenever Durant goes somewhere, they cater to every one of his needs. And I know, right, when he went to Golden State, it's still viewed as Steph's team, but the best player was clearly Golden State. And in those late moments, the ball went to Kevin Durant. You look at Brooklyn, that's a totally different circumstance, but the whole organization was literally handed over to Kevin Durant. In this case, they got to play through Durant, you're right. And Durant's the best player on the court. What you've done in years past, it really doesn't matter because Durant's being brought in to be the finisher in this case, and we'll see if he could end up doing that. But if they don't win, like I asked Calvin Booth earlier, is this championship or bust for Denver? And he said no. You very rarely hear an owner, a GM, a coach say it's championship or bust. Like Brandon Bean last year wouldn't say it's championship or bust with the Bills. It's 100% championship or bust. Now, I think you got to be sensitive now, which it's like so crazy, about saying that someone failed. And I know this Suns team is only together for, what, 8 or 9 regular season games. But they don't win a championship this year. It's a failure. It's 100% a failure. Now, you could still have successful moments in the season. But at this rate, this Suns team went all in to go win a championship. And you may win a championship next year, and it may be worth it. But if you don't win a championship this year, in a year where we didn't feel all that great about many of these teams going into the postseason in the NBA, it's absolutely a failure. Also, if you take the Bucks out of it, too. I know they're in the East and the Suns are in the West, but a lot of people had, like yourself, the Suns and Bucks meeting in the finals. Now, the only team that probably in the East a lot of people really feel like could go to the finals is the Celtics. People aren't going to cross off the Heat because of Butler, but we'll see what happens with that ankle. You got to win a championship this year if you're the Suns. And I got to see a championship team. And ever since they went up 2-0 in the NBA Finals, I have not seen a championship team from them since then. Because last year, the regular season meant nothing into the playoffs. And in the second round, they got embarrassed by the Mavericks. And this year so far, first round, what's that? Was pedestrian. Wasn't really inspiring. And now, in a game like this tonight, I know it's early in the series, but Hickey, you're not wrong. It feels like their backs are up against the wall, and they have to, for the first time this postseason, the Suns have to make a statement. Because so far, they have not made a statement. They've just been blank. I got to see them make a statement tonight. And I've been a lot more impressed with Jamal Murray in this postseason so far than anything that Phoenix has showed me. And for Denver, it's weird because all year long we wondered if Denver could win a championship. And now, one game into this series, we're wondering if Phoenix can even show up tonight. It's funny how that works there, Hickey.
I mean, look, the playoffs are always about swings and momentum, ebbs and flows, and your opinion changes based on how, you know, series go, how injuries go, how teams look. But I mean, especially when you look at kind of, you know, this game, I mean, yeah, it's just, you're right. Phoenix has not looked the same ever since they were up 2-0 and then lost 4 straight to the Bucks. And this is a game where, I guess the only thing I'll say to be fair to Phoenix is there's really no way to make a statement against the Clippers. Like, if they win by 40 without Kawhi or Paul George, it's still like, okay, there's no Kawhi or Paul George.
No, but there wouldn't be this criticism.
Nothing they would have done, I think, would have given you a reason to believe. Now you have a chance against the Nuggets to actually send a real statement. You lose game one. Here's a statement opportunity here in game two to not allow the series to quickly get out of your hands.
So I'm not disagreeing here with you because I don't think anyone's sitting there and just like praising the Suns out the wazoo if they would have just blown out the Clippers. But they never put their foot on the throat of the Clippers and just dominate an inferior team in that last round. They just did not do it. So it's like, to me, in that regard, since you didn't do that, that's even when you win a series in five, it is a bad look. If they would have just done that for three games out of the five, where they're just clearly the better team, I don't think we're sitting here and crushing the Suns all that much after one loss. But the fact they have not looked ready for the moment at all yet is part of why this is the first time I'm really intrigued on what they're going to be able to do tonight. And I genuinely don't know the answer. I think this is a coin flip. It's a 50-50 game tonight.
Also, a lot of pressure on the Nuggets, though. Now that Jamal Murray's healthy, looking good, you had an opportunity to go up 2-0 at home against a team that a lot of people are picking to win the West. You got also yourself sent a statement and take control of the series right away, because Calvin Booth can say it's not championship or bust. It's championship, or at least finals or bust.
It is, but there's more pressure on the Suns tonight. I know you want to protect home court, but you kind of feel like through four games, if you would ask before the series that this would be 2-2, heading back to Denver is probably what most people would say.